Okay. Good. Good there in the back. Okay. So welcome to Compelling Data Visualization with Power View in Office and SharePoint. This is a session for you to get a deep dive into Power View. We're going to spend a good amount of time demoing all sorts of features in Power View, and we're going to be doing that all in Excel now that Power View is built into Excel. And we're also going to show you what happens when you publish that up to SharePoint and what's available in SharePoint in the browser. My name is Ricardo Muti. I'm a program manager on the SQL Server Reporting Services team back at Microsoft headquarters in Redmond near Seattle. And the Reporting Services team is the team that builds all of the, what you might call, classic reporting services functionality that you're used to that is shipped in several releases. But it's also the team that created Power View and shipped it in SQL Server 2012, which shipped earlier this year. And then we partnered with the Office team and with other teams to then get that right into Excel out of the box. So I have worked on Power View quite a bit myself. It's been my focus for the last 2.5 years. And I've worked on a number of the features that you're going to see today. So hopefully this is a good opportunity for you guys to hear, you know, from the people in the team that worked on this stuff, how it works, how you use it, why it works the way it works, and give you some good insight there. So yeah, if you're interested in all in Power View, this is really, you've come to the right session. So moving ahead, here's the agenda that we have for this session. First of all, want to give you sort of the explanation from like I said, from the team that built it, what is Power View? It's very important that you guys have a good understanding of what scenarios is it targeting, what is the target audience for it, when would you use it, how does it compare with other tools in the Microsoft BI stack. What's new in Power View? So I mentioned that we shipped Power View in SQL Server 2012, which shipped earlier this year in March, I believe. But then we shipped the service pack for it not more than a few days ago. That was sort of aligned with the Office 2013 release. And there are a whole bunch of new features that are available in Power View, both outside of Excel and in Excel. So we'll highlight and demo some of those new features. Finally, we're going to spend the bulk of this session looking at what does it mean to have Power View built right into Excel and built right into Excel in SharePoint. So Excel on the desktop and Excel in SharePoint. What form does that take? What's it like to work with that? And what's possible? It is a very demo-heavy session. We are going to have a good portion of the time of the session spent in demos. So I will promise you that we'll spend a good amount of time demoing. On the flip side, I don't want to just throw you right in there without any context. There's some important context that I want to give you. So there are some slides to start off with. But I promise you, it is a demo-heavy session. So when we're demoing, we're going to show you, you know, how do you create Power View reports? What's it like? And in the context of doing that, you're going to see me build out this report, and we'll show what it's like to use a lot of the features along the way. And we'll throw in some tips and tricks there as well, just, you know, things to know about how Power View works and things that you can do in Power View, little tricks, as well as things that you can do in the model, the data model in Excel that will influence the behavior of Power View. And so things to keep in mind when you're creating your model if you want a certain behavior in Power View. My clicker is not working. There we go. So what is Power View? This is sort of the official explanation. It is an interactive data exploration, visualization, and presentation experience. I've highlighted some of the words there that I think are important. So interactive, you know, rendering beautiful charts and beautiful maps and all these nice visualizations is really only half the story. It's really fundamental, an important tenet of Power View that all of this stuff is just automatically interactive. You can touch it, you can click it, you can you know, sort, filter, drill down, cross-filter things so all the visuals sort of affect one another. And having it be interactive rather than just rendering this static results is really what adds the next dimension of being able to discover insights in the data, if you could see how they affect one another and how they're interrelated. Exploration. So the whole idea is that you don't necessarily start with, oh, I have a report that I've planned out the design in my mind, and now I'm going to go build it. That's a very traditional way of doing reporting, whereas Power View is more of, I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to end up with it or if it's even going to be something long-lasting, but I have some questions, and I think that the answer is in my data. Let me just explore the data, see what's in there, and test some hypotheses and just explore and experiment. In the context of doing that, you're building these data visualizations. And so PowerView has this concept of a bunch of different data visualizations. We've added more in this release. We'll add more in the next release. And just visualizing the same data in different ways and going beyond the sort of traditional tables and charts that you're probably used to in Excel. And finally, presentation. So when you've created something, you've discovered some insight, you've got a beautiful visualization that really illustrates it, you want to share it with your team. You want to present it to others. So using things like SharePoint and PowerPoint to do things like that. Another way that I can explain PowerView is to contrast it with other tools, particularly what we might call classic reporting services or traditional reporting services. So to give you a little bit of a brief history about reporting services, it was introduced as sort of an add-on, a feature add-on for SQL Server 2000 back in 2004, I believe. And the scenario there basically is what I might call traditional reporting, competing with products like Crystal Reports, for example, right? It's very much the direct digital or electronic equivalent of a traditional report. By a traditional report, I even mean a paper report. So the paper reports we're all used to, things that predate computers, taking that and mapping that fairly directly to paper on the screen, right? So if you think about what traditional reporting is, it's data-bound document generation. You pull in some data, and you crunch some numbers, and you do some processing, and you spit out a document of some kind, a Word document, a PDF. Now, obviously, when you take that to the screen and you take that to computers, you have the ability to add some interactivity there and take advantage of the fact that it's electronic media now. You can have, you know, hyperlinks in your PDF. You could have, you know, for example, PDF. You can fill out forms in a PDF. So there's the ability to take advantage of the fact that you're on a computer and you can do some interactivity. But it's very much secondary. I mean, a PDF is still very close to, a digital representation of paper. The other aspect of it that's interesting is that think of the target audience that we had for reporting services. Initially, you know, traditionally the people who build reports are people in IT or BI professionals, or what we might call BI developers. So they're people with a high degree of technical skill and technical sophistication. And originally, the only way you could design a reporting services report was in Visual Studio, in a tool called Report Designer, Visual Studio. There was no report builder. Later, we added Report Builder to try and reach an audience that maybe wasn't quite comfortable in Visual Studio and didn't need it. But the thing was, there's still a fairly steep learning curve, and it still remained the domain of what I might call power users. You need to have some knowledge of, well, how do I, you know, create a connection? What is a connection? Can I build a connection string? Am I comfortable using a SQL query builder, or even maybe writing a SQL query myself? I have to understand concepts of, you know, grouping and how do I structure a table and be very explicit about how I design my report. So, and then there's just the sheer breadth of features that are in Report Builder. Basically, it's got every feature from a report design perspective that we have in Visual Studio. So it can be quite overwhelming. So with PowerView, we wanted to change two things. Number one, we wanted to go after a different scenario. We have traditional reporting pretty well covered. It's a mature product now. There are a lot of people using it. We'll continue to make improvements to that, but there's another scenario out there that's emerged over the last few years, and it's very different from traditional reporting. My primary goal is not so much that I want to spit out a PDF at the end of the day or print out something at the end of the day. It's I want something on the screen that will let me explore data, let me interact with it. It's very much optimized for the on-screen interactive experience and not so much about document generation. The other aspect of it is that we want to go and deliver on this mission of self-service BI so that, you know, the masses really have BI at their fingertips. Somebody who doesn't know really how to create a connection string or definitely doesn't know how to build a SQL query, can they just go and get access to the data that they need and explore it with a few clicks, with easy drag and drop? Think creating a pivot table in Excel, but maybe even easier than that in some ways. So those are sort of the two ways I would contrast PowerView with traditional reporting services, is we're going at it for a different audience, we're going for simplicity, and we're going for a different scenario, which is optimized for on-screen interactivity versus document generation. To explain that a little bit more, here are some important concepts I think you should know about PowerView. So first of all, I mentioned this concept of self-service BI. It's been the theme of our team, the analysis services team and the reporting services team, and the broader Microsoft BI team to a large extent, to deliver on this vision that we call managed self-service BI. Right? If you think of the way BI traditionally works, like I mentioned, the business has all sorts of demands. They need this report, they need this analysis, they need these numbers. They throw all that at IT and say, I'm dependent on IT for you to get me those things. The problem with that is that the volume of those demands and the complexity of those demands is ever increasing. And it's increasing at a much, much higher rate in terms of what the business needs and the data that they need, much, much higher rate than obviously IT is hiring people to fulfill these needs. So if you crunch the numbers and you look at the data, it is just a sheer fact that IT will not be able to satisfy all these demands of the business. In many cases, they can't today. They certainly won't be able to tomorrow. So the only solution to that is to put BI in the hands of everybody, at least so that everybody within an organization, information workers, we might call them, can do the most basic things that they need to do to get answers to their questions, to create the basic data visualizations that they need, to do 80, 90% of what they need to do their job. There will always be that 10% or 20% left that is maybe too complex for them to do. And that's where the BI professional within IT still has, you know, there's still a need for them. Furthermore, there's all the infrastructure and there's all the modeling and enterprise modeling and enterprise information cataloging that IT still should be responsible for. So that's the managed side of self-service, keeping an eye on all of this and finding out where can we spend our time more effectively. Another important fundamental tenet of PowerView is what we call a visual design experience. So you're in an office-like app, and you're building a PowerView report or a PowerView sheet visualization. You're working with the data. You're not building this sort of template that then you have to go and run it and preview it to see what it's going to look like. You're always working with the data. You're always working on the canvas. You're seeing, you know, the report that's been executed. And then we have a lot of really cool visualizations, like I said, that go beyond the traditional tables and charts that we're used to. And we'll keep enhancing those to create what I might call the next generation of data visualizations. It's metadata driven. What I mean by that is there is a model. There's a modeling layer that sits underneath the visualization layer, and it influences the way the visualization layer works. So with a couple of clicks, something just magically appears on the canvas, and it's something that's pretty good. It's pretty good results that have a pretty good chance of answering the user's question. The way that works is with intelligent defaults, and that's based on all this rich metadata that's in this semantic model. Furthermore, the interactivity is not something that you have to configure. So if you know you want to click on one chart and have it cross-filter or cross-highlight other charts or other visualizations, that just works without any configuration. The reason being, again, we have metadata in the model that tells us how everything is interrelated. Finally, presentation ready at all times. We don't want it to be that you spend, you know, 5, 10 minutes doing your analysis, getting the right data, getting the answer to your questions, but it looks horrible or it looks unprofessional. And then you have to spend a whole bunch of time messing around with it to pretty it up so that it's suitable to present to others. We want something that looks good just by default and looks good all the time and is always ready for you to share or show to somebody else. A common question that we get is, I don't really understand what PowerView connects to. What can I connect to with PowerView? What are the data sources? The answer to that is twofold. There's the data source that you connect to directly. What is PowerView actually querying? And then there is, well, where does that data come from? And how does that get refreshed or imported, right? So the first answer is fairly simple. What does PowerView query? What does it connect to and what does it query? It queries one of two things. It queries what we call the Excel data model. So in Excel 2013, a workbook is not just a spreadsheet anymore. It can contain a rich tabular or sort of relational style BI semantic model right in the workbook, and that's what we query if you're querying a workbook or you're querying the workbook that actually contains the PowerView sheets itself. There's also, you can create a BI semantic model using analysis services if you need something with high scale, enterprise class. You can, rather than doing it in a workbook or you can take it out of a workbook, you can create an analysis services database, deploy it to an analysis services instance that's outside of SharePoint, and we can query that as well. The reason why that we connected these two things is they're actually two flavors of the exact same thing. They're the analysis services BI semantic model. That was originally created outside of Excel, and now it's just built right into Excel. So whether it's a model in a workbook or whether it's a model in the database, it's the same thing, really. It's the same engine, and it's the same type of model. So that's what we query directly. Now, that model can go and connect to a variety of different data sources, pretty much everything under the sun. You know, there's a bunch of native connectors for a first-class experience connecting to SQL or Oracle or DB2 or SharePoint lists. And then, of course, you always have the out of, oh, there's no native provider for this, but there's generic OLADB or ODBC connectivity, and you can connect to whatever you've got a driver for. So you can pull in data from all these different sources into your model and refresh that on a schedule or refresh it on demand, and then Power View queries that. A little bit more of an explanation about, you know, contrasting the difference between traditional reporting and Power View. So here's an example of traditional reporting services, right? Here's, if I were to create a report in Report Builder, right? I want to create a simple crosstab or matrix kind of report against AdventureWorks, for example. And I open up Report Builder, and I use the Tablex wizard to design my Tablex. I would get something that looks like this. This is what I would see on the design surface. Notice it's not what the user is going to see when they run the report. It's the template. It shows me what are the fields that are in this Tablex, how are they grouped, what are the expressions, if I have any expressions that calculate different things that are being used there. But it's the template. We're not actually running this report and seeing the real data. To do that, I click preview or run or something like that, and then we'll get something like this, which is what the user is going to see when we go and actually publish this report. So at the process of building a reporting services report, and in a lot of other BI tools, is you're frequently flipping between these two things. You're designing some template that gets run and then generates some output, and then you're previewing the output. And finally, when you decide you've got what you wanted, you publish it up to a server, and that's what users see. So if you think about the workflow of this, here's the workflow of traditional reporting. Right? I design a report. I have something in my mind that I'm pretty sure I want a report that looks roughly like some picture that I have in my mind, and I start working on that, and I refine it, but I'm working on the design surface. However, I want to see what the user's going to see, so I go into preview that, and that actually now runs the report, crunches the numbers, previews, gives me a preview of the output that the user's going to see. But like I said, it's probably not 100% exactly what I wanted the first time around, so I do a lot of switching back and forth between these two things. Finally, I get what I want, and I decide I'm going to publish this up to a server. So we publish this up to SharePoint or to a reporting services server. Then we get to actually running a report, rendering a report. And what does that do? Like I said, it's basically data-bound document generation. You take some inputs. For example, your report can have some parameters. Maybe they have default values. Maybe the user has to specify some of them. And then there's the actual data. We go to all these different data sources directly. There's no modeling layer here. We just go to them directly. We connect to them. We run the queries that you told us, you know, the report designer created. And then we pull in a snapshot of that data, and we store it in a snapshot. And then we process the report against that snapshot of data and those parameter values, all the logic in the report, and we render some document as the output. Could be HTML, could be PDF, whatever. We render some output. That's data-bound document generation. Now, of course, you can surround that with sort of an unattended mode. You can create a subscription and run this on a schedule and then deliver it, you know, to somebody's email inbox or something like that. But again, still data-bound document generation. Power View has a very, very different looking workflow. It starts with, I have some questions about my business. And I have all these data sources that I know we have, where we're capturing all this data. And I have a hope, at least, and some optimism that the answer to my question lies in that data. If I could only just get at it and start exploring it and experimenting with it and analyzing it. So I start with this data, and I import it into a data model. Maybe IT has already created an enterprise data model that contains this stuff, in which case I'm already at this step. Or maybe they haven't, or maybe I want to do something more ad hoc, more one-off. I can create my own data model right in Excel. To some extent, this has been simplified to the degree that users may not even know that that's what they're doing anymore, but they are. So we've got a data model of some kind. It could be small, a personal desktop-level data model, all the way up to an enterprise data model. But I have some data model. That's my starting point for Power View. I can now create Power View sheets that connect to that data model and just explore that data, see what's in there, experiment with different things, and then interact with that content on the Power View sheet. Finally, when I've got something interesting, I want to share it with others. So like I said, there's a step of present and share. It's not necessarily exporting a document. I mean, it could be, but it could be just, I'm publishing this up to SharePoint, I'm sending a link to you, we're looking at it together in a boardroom, I'm exporting it to PowerPoint, whatever that may be. The purpose of this slide, I guess, is just to show that we did a bunch of work in SQL Server 2012. There are a whole bunch of features that are in PowerView. I'm not going to go through them one by one. We're going to see a lot of them. But there you go. So there's a lot of, it's a V1, and yet there's a lot of stuff crammed into that release. And we're iterating very quickly on that. I mean, the first batch of PowerView enhancements was about 6 months later in SP1. So we're trying to release more often. We're trying to release functionality at a more rapid pace than you're probably used to with 2, 3, 4 year release cycles. As for what's new in SQL Server 2012 SP1, I want to spend a little more time explaining this, because this has been the focus for the past few months. So there are a few categories of things that we invested in. We made some very strategic investments. Number one, I mentioned that there's the modeling layer, and then there's the data visualization layer, which is PowerView. When we shipped SQL Server 2012 RTM earlier this year, we had to make some unfortunate cuts. The reason being that the model had already gone through a couple of releases, and they had built up all these features in the model, and we have to do a bunch of work to support all of them and behave correctly with respect to all of them in PowerView. But we were building version 1 of PowerView, and we couldn't fit all that into the release. So for example, all of these things were not supported. You could use them in the model, and you could use them in Excel, but we wouldn't take advantage of them in PowerView. So if you created, for example, a KPI, you couldn't use it in PowerView. And we know that was a big pain point. It was a painful cut for us as well. Top priority was we wanted to fix all of those things. So for example, you can create hierarchies of, you know, a typical hierarchy is date. You can have year, month, year, quarter, month, day, or something like that. You can use that in PowerView. KPIs, so key performance indicators. So you can create something that's got not only a value, but a target value that it's compared with, and then the status. Is it good or is it bad? Is it trending up or down? And you can use those in PowerView. You can tag data with certain categories in the model. So you could say, this is not just a, this is an example of the semantic metadata of the model. This is not just a string. This is a country name, or this is a state name or a city name. This isn't just a string, it's a URL that points to an image. Or this is a URL that points to somewhere else on the web. Or this is not an integer. I mean, it is an integer, but it's not just an integer. It's a latitude or a longitude. So depending on how the data is actually categorized in terms of what it means, we can apply different behaviors in PowerView and do the right thing in PowerView. So we took advantage of a lot of that now. Perspectives is another one where you can divide your model and say, some people are interested more in these tables and fields, other people are interested more in these tables and fields, and we'll respect that in PowerView if you connect to a certain perspective. Style and formatting was another one. So everybody asked, can I change the chart colors? Can I have a background, different background color? Can I have a different background image? There was very, very limited support for that in PowerView in SQL Server 2012 RTM. We addressed a lot of that. We've got something like 40 themes that we basically are aligned with the Office theme, sort of like the themes you have in PowerPoint. You can do background colors. You can do background images. You can also just take any image that's on your desktop or, you know, wherever you get it from, and just drop it anywhere on the canvas. If you want to put a company logo or something like that on your report, you can do that. You can control font size. So, you know, some people complain that the text is okay on my laptop, but when I put it on a big screen, I want to scale the text to make it bigger, so you can do things like that. You can drop a hyperlink anywhere on your report. So if you want to link to, you know, some other BI artifact or something, you can just drop a hyperlink on your report. And then there's a big one, which is visualizations and interactivity. So we added some pretty major new features. Maps was one that, again, we would have loved to get in the first release. But a few months later, we were finally able to add it. So you have interactive Bing maps in PowerView. We added pie charts. Love them or hate them. Some people say they're necessary. Some people say they're evil. Whatever your opinion is, we have pie charts. So they're there if you want them. And then drill down. So you can do drill down in tables and matrices, and in charts as well. And I feel like I'm forgetting something.
Does that remove performance points?
So the question was, does it remove the need for performance points? It doesn't necessarily replace performance points or remove the need for performance point. It's pretty good at certain things. It's very optimized for, you know, the scorecarding scenario. So, you know, use which tool fits your scenario best. So does anybody know what feature I'm missing? Anybody want to take a guess? There's another big pile of work that we did that I can't remember what it is. No, we had export to PowerPoint. I think it's similar, though. Sorry? Yeah, Excel. That's right. There we go. So yeah, we put the whole thing in Excel, which is sort of the focus of this session. So, and this is a really, you know, monumental thing that we did, because it really helps us tell the Microsoft BI story a lot better. This is where we wanted to go. We finally have something more like the vision that we've been trying to achieve for several years. This is what Microsoft BI is. It is tools that you already have, industry-leading tools, the most popular tools in these categories: Excel, SharePoint, and SQL Server. It's the most widely deployed Office productivity suite, most widely deployed portal and collaboration tool, and the most widely deployed database management system and OLAP analytical system. So tools you probably already have, or a lot of customers already have, tools users are familiar with. This is Microsoft BI, and these are how you access Microsoft BI scenarios and capabilities. So Excel is now the one-stop tool for doing traditional spreadsheets, doing analysis, free-form analysis, the sort of stuff that to some degree you can only do in a spreadsheet, but as well as rich, you know, stronger, more structured modeling, next-generation data visualization. It's all in Excel. If you want to share it, you put it in SharePoint, similar capabilities in SharePoint. It's a very consistent story. If you outgrow the scale or functional limitations of a workbook, take the thing, put it in Visual Studio, put it in a database, put it in a dedicated SQL Server Analysis Services database. So it's a very flexible platform from that perspective as well. When we put this stuff in Excel, we got a tremendous reception from pretty well everybody, from our Microsoft Field, from some of our MVPs who have been waiting for something like this for some time, and we're just thrilled to see it happen, from our customers, from everybody, from analysts. So they're recognizing the sheer significance of something like this, where finally you can say Microsoft Excel is a serious BI tool that provides all the needs that that you will need, for all sorts of different scenarios. So in integrating this into Excel, we now have a few different flavors of PowerView, in terms of it's not just one app. It shows up in a few different apps. It's more of a feature or a capability that shows up in different apps. So there's Excel, obviously Excel client, which is maybe the primary entry point. Everybody's got Excel on their desktop. Anybody who's got Office Pro Plus is going to have Excel built into there with Excel 2013. You can also use Office 365 as well if you want to have more of the cloud subscription model and get it through that as well. Excel web app built into SharePoint or in Office 365. You have PowerView capabilities there as well. So if you're doing this on-prem, you'll need SharePoint Server 2013 Enterprise, and you'll also need SQL Server 2012 SP1 Business Intelligence Edition, so BI Edition or Enterprise Edition. But if you have BI Edition or higher, you'll get the PowerView capabilities. So on the server side, on the client side, all you need is Excel. On the server side, if you want to take advantage of the server capabilities, you'll need a certain edition of SharePoint, a certain edition of SQL Server, and they work together to provide those PowerView capabilities. Finally, if you have either SharePoint Server 2010 or 2013 Enterprise, and you've also got the SQL Server bits, then you have PowerView in that pre-existing standalone mode where it's a web app in and of itself. It's not integrated into Excel web app. So you can use either one depending on your scenario. Depending on which app you use, the thing that you're creating is different. You're either creating a standalone PowerView report or you're creating an Excel workbook that has some PowerView sheets in it. And there are some differences. So one is an RDLX file, the other is a typical XLSX file. A PowerView report is pure PowerView. It only contains PowerView sheets. It doesn't contain anything else. It doesn't contain a data model like Excel does, so it only connects to external data models. And all of the sheets in that workbook connect to that same external data source. Whereas with Excel workbooks, you can have a mix of Excel sheets and native and PowerView sheets. The workbook itself can contain its own data model. Some of those sheets can connect to that embedded data model in the same workbook, so you can think of it as like the workbook kind of connecting to its own cache, or they could connect to external analysis services models as well. And then different sheets in that workbook can connect to different models. They don't all have to connect to the embedded model or all have to connect to external models. Some can connect to the embedded model, some can connect to external models. In terms of the architecture, what it is you have to buy, what it is you have to deploy and set up, I'll give you a quick answer to that. So here's what Power View and Excel Client looks like. Basically, you have Excel. Power View is built right into Excel, so there's nothing extra to install. It ships in the Excel box. Power View is dependent on the SQL Server Reporting Services engine. You need essentially a report server. However, for Excel, we take the report server and we put it right inside Excel, so that also ships in the Excel box. Then Reporting Services needs to connect to that model, that data model. So we need analysis services, and we need the analysis services engine to host that model and process the queries against that model. That is also built into Excel. So the whole stack really is built inside of Excel. Now, I mentioned that's basically what the flow looks like, the data flow looks like, if you're connecting to the embedded data model. If you're connecting to an external data model, another workbook in SharePoint or another AS database outside of SharePoint, then you're connecting to some external database server. And that could be, like I said, a SQL Server Analysis Services database. And then, you know, you would need a SQL Server license for analysis services to host that database. But just for the embedded model, everything is built right into Excel. Now, for Excel services, this is a little bit more complicated because we're talking about a multi-tier server environment. And this is something that I worked on quite a bit because, you know, there are complexities involved with the different pieces you have to deploy. How do they work together? How does authentication and security work? But basically, here's how it works. You have these sort of four tiers. There is the client's machine. They're using Excel web app through a browser. And then there is a multi-tier SharePoint farm. Now, in practice, these could all be one. You could have a single server, a SharePoint deployment, which has all of these tiers on one physical tier or physical machine. But they could be scaled out to as many as these three tiers. So you're running Excel web app in the browser. You open some document, some workbook in SharePoint. What happens then is that talks to some Excel web services on the SharePoint web front end, the web service in the SharePoint farm. That in turn talks to some back-end Excel calculation services that run in the app server tier as service applications within SharePoint. Finally, what happens is if you have a data model, you have a worksheet that connects to the data model, Excel services takes the data model in that workbook, extracts it from the workbook, and streams it to analysis services, to an instance that's configured in a special Power Pivot for SharePoint mode, whose job it is solely to take these data models embedded in these workbooks and kind of mount them in an analysis services instance so that they can run queries against them. So unlike the client, this is external to Excel, in this case, Excel services. It's not built in. You have to have an analysis services instance, and then you register Excel services with analysis services. Is there a question?
What's the version requirement?
The version requirement. So you will need SQL Server 2012 SP1. Yes. And it will also need to be BI edition or higher, so not standard edition. BI edition or enterprise edition. So what happens with... The other thing that I'm showing here is if you're connecting to an external data model, again, that would be some other AS database that could be configured. It doesn't have to be configured in a special SharePoint mode. It's just some AS database somewhere. What happens when you bring PowerView into the mix? So PowerView, you know, if you have a PowerView sheet in your workbook and you open that up in Excel web app, you would see it there. That needs to talk to reporting services. So it talks to the reporting services add-in, which is on the web front end. That talks to the actual report server service or the engine that sits on the SharePoint app server. And then finally, that talks to Excel services and to analysis services. If we are talking about connecting to the embedded data model, if we're talking about connecting to an external data model, again, similarly, we just connect to analysis services. From a reporting services perspective, we just connect through ADOMD, so we don't really know exactly what we're connecting to. It all looks the same to us. But ADOMD has this logic to kind of negotiate with Excel services, oh, is this a workbook or not? Is it in the same SharePoint farm or not? And a lot of this sort of logic. But again, the thing here to understand is that if you want to run this on the server and have support for PowerView, you need reporting services, which is also part of SQL Server 2012 SP1. Yep, another question. Okay, the difference between PowerPivot and Tabular? Yeah, so one of them is, they're basically two deployment modes. It's the same bits, but you're creating an analysis services instance, and you're setting it into one of actually three modes. One mode is classic analysis services, multi-dimensional for cubes and things like that. Another is the tabular mode, so it's optimized for tabular models. That would host analysis services tabular databases, not workbooks, databases. Power Pivot, when you put it in that mode, is basically analysis services supporting SharePoint, supporting workbooks in SharePoint. So that's what's specially registered with Excel services, so that it will take the data model from the workbook and put it in that instance. So it's just, is it hosting workbooks or is it hosting databases? There are some functional differences in terms of what features are available or certain limitations across these different versions. In the interest of time, I guess I don't think I will go through all of these. But for example, let's point out some major ones. If you want to design reports and design Power View visualizations, you do that in Excel client, or you do that in Power View standalone. It's not yet available in Excel web app. So in Excel web app, you can still interact with the reports and view them, but you can't, for example, create a new chart, or you can't change the chart type or add a new sheet, that sort of thing. We're hoping to light up that functionality in the future. Like I said, in Excel, if you're talking about a workbook, you have an embedded data model in that workbook. If you're talking about a standalone report, that does not have an embedded data model, so it connects only to things that are external to the report. If you have a standalone report, everything must connect to the same data source, whereas if you have a workbook, different sheets can connect to different models. I mentioned briefly that there's a third type of analysis services database, essentially, which is multidimensional cubes. For the Power View integration in Excel and Excel web app, we don't yet have the ability to connect to those cubes, and we're hoping to have that in a future release, whereas that is being lit up, and you might have heard some of the announcements, that is being lit up in Power View standalone, but it will have to wait a little bit longer until it's in Excel. You can't currently reorder the Power View sheets in Excel yet. That's a limitation we hope to address. Export to PowerPoint is unfortunately not yet available with Power View in Excel. So there are some different pros and cons. There are things you can do in Excel that you can't do in standalone, and vice versa. Yes? So if you have a cube and you can't immediately, you know, migrate to a tabular model, you need to connect to that cube, you can still use native Excel sheets. So you could create, you know, a native pivot table or native pivot chart. The limitation is just that you can't use Power View. Okay. So I'm going to switch over, and we'll do a demo here. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. It's not to say that you can't connect indirectly to it. So you could take your cube, pull it into the Excel data model or into a tabular database, and Power View can talk to that. It just can't talk directly to the cube yet. Okay, so here I am in Excel 2013, and I'm just going to create a blank workbook here. And to show you how easy it is to start with Power View, I'll give you a very, very simple example. Imagine here there's somebody at SharePoint conference who is capturing how many people are attending different sessions. And as you would imagine, just plugging that into a spreadsheet, and they'll later do their analysis on top of it. So they could enter something like session and the number of attendees. And maybe we'll have a session on, I don't know, PowerPoint, and maybe one on, PowerPoint, maybe something on Visio, and then something on Excel. And PowerPoint maybe had, 78 attendees, Visio had 134 attendees, and Excel had, 458 attendees, because Excel is awesome. So I'm going to select these things, and I could create a Power View just right on top of this. A practice that maybe we might argue is a little bit better is Excel tables are really cool and give you a lot of functionality. So if you have a structured table like this, maybe format it as a table. Yep, my table has headers. The first row is the header. And now we got a table. And you can sort the table and you can add new columns to the table, all the typical Excel stuff. But if I go in here and I say insert Power View, it's going to load the Power View components, and it's going to insert a new type of sheet, which is a Power View sheet. And it takes a sec the first time. And here we go. Now we got Power View in Excel. And it's going to take that same table, and it's going to just drop it on the canvas for me for convenience. All right, so there's my table. And you can see in the field list here that I've got that table with its two columns. So that is now in the data model in Excel, even though I didn't do any special data modeling. Now, I have another workbook that I created. And this one is already pre-created, so let me open this up. Click Enable Content. So here what I did was I used Excel to pull in some external data, and I pulled that into the internal model. So we can pull from all these different data sources, from Access, you know, from various relational databases, from an OData feed, from SharePoint, or from really, like I said, anything with an OLADB driver. So what I did was I pulled some data from Windows Azure Marketplace. They've got a bunch of free data sets. And there was one from a medical research company that had published a sample of their medical research from patients all across the United States and why they visited the doctor and what information they collected when they went there. So I thought that was pretty interesting information. I pulled that all in. And if you look at this Power Pivot add-in, this is a modeling add-in that ships, like I said, in the Excel box. You can see the data that I pulled in. Just open up this add-in. And you can see I have all these different tables of data that I pulled in from these data sources. I actually then mashed it up with some of my own data. So some of these tables come from that data set. Some I got, you know, off the web or from somewhere else, and mashed them up and created relationships among them. If you go to the diagram view, it's another way of looking at the same data. You really get the sense that what you're building is not just a spreadsheet anymore. You're building a relational model. So you can see the tables and the relationships among them. So this is all in the workbook. Now what I can do then is I can say insert Power View. And taking stock of what we have here, we have, you know, traditional Excel. It's another sheet in Excel. You've got all these options on the ribbon. You'll see a Power View tab in the ribbon. And then you've got this field list here. This is showing the tables and the columns in our model. It's the same sort of thing that you would see if we created a pivot table against this. So what I can do is I can explore this now. I can say, OK, what are these tables and what are these columns? And for example, I can hover over this and get a description of what this table is. So not being much of a medical professional, I wouldn't have really known exactly what a chart means. But if we hover over that, there's some metadata in the model that the modeler put in that says this refers to patient charts. You know, a medical chart. They go in and they collect all this information. So I can just click this. I'll just click the table, and it's going to add a bunch of data to the canvas. And let me just make the text size a little bit bigger here. There we go. So it's added all this data to the canvas. And if I open up this table now, what you're going to see is it selected some fields and not others. And it may seem sort of arbitrary, but this is an example of model metadata. The modeler put in some metadata that says, when somebody just clicks on this table without being more specific of what exactly they want, this is sort of a more interesting subset that we should show by default. Of course, I could change it and add columns or remove columns, but that's a nice starting point. So as I open the field list here, you might see some different icons in here, right? So if I just zoom in on that. See, we've got this little card icon, you've got a traffic light icon. What do these things mean? So that little card icon there over where it says chart ID, that means that this thing, this column, is either a key for the table or it is something that groups by the key for the table. So if I add one of those, I'm going to get a details group, meaning I'm going to get one row in my visualization for every row in the data. It's the lowest level of detail. The sigma icon there, what that means is that this is a column in the table as well, but it's a numeric column. And it is set so that if it's ambiguous in Power View, whether we should group on this thing, meaning showing all the distinct values, or whether we should aggregate it, meaning average it or sum it, this will default to aggregate it. Whereas if we didn't have that icon there, it would group on it. The other thing that you may see sometimes, I don't have it in this particular model, is a calculator icon. That is essentially what they call a calculated field, or sometimes they call a measure in the model. It's actually not a column at all. It's just a formula. It's an Excel formula that calculates something within some scope. So you can't group on it. You can only calculate the value of it. The traffic light icon there is a KPI, and we'll get to that a little bit later. So here, you know, to show you the difference between a details group and a non-details group, if I were to go into this chart and grab physician specialty, right, I'm going to get a few rows. I don't know, something like, let's say, 50 rows or 100 rows. This is a table with hundreds of thousands of rows. Obviously, that's not every distinct value in the database. It's all the distinct values of this one field. If you contrast that with, say, taking something like chart ID, which is the key, I'm going to get one value for literally every row in that table. By the way, you can see how fast it is and the fact that it's doing paging of data in the query. So you don't have to worry about how big your table is. It's just automatically going to get more as you scroll. So that's sort of the difference between those two. when I mentioned the measures and whether they aggregate or not, let's give you an example of the difference between that. So let's grab region name, right? And then let's look at, I want to get the blood pressure for each region. So grab the blood pressure. And again, that didn't explode to hundreds of thousands of rows because there are obviously hundreds of thousands of distinct values of the blood pressure, right? It's not. It's showing one per region because it's not grouping on that. It's aggregating on that. And it's doing an aggregation on the average rather than, say, the sum or the min or the max. And that's actually what I want because it doesn't really make sense to add up blood pressures. The reason it's doing average is because, again, this will be my answer to a lot of things today, but it's the model metadata. The model says it average makes sense for this field. So contrast that with, if I were to take, let's get rid of this, and I'm going to add patient age. Patient age doesn't have that sigma symbol on it. So what did it just do? It grabbed every distinct patient age and grouped on it. Now, I'm not stuck with that. I can actually change it. So I can come down here, and I can say average the patient age instead of do not summarize. And then it will average it. Now, the other thing you might notice here is that I'm getting a lot of decimal places. I really don't need to be that precise with age. So I can change the formatting of this, and I can say, well, maybe just give me, I don't know, one decimal place like that. And then you'll get a prettier result. So there's some metadata in the model that says how many decimal places you should get. You can change it in the report as well. Let's create, let's see if we can create a matrix. So for example, let's create, let's drag in region name. I can drag in region name, and then I can maybe drag in state name. And by the way, just to show you another new feature, this is an example of a hierarchy. I've got a location, and the location has two sort of sublevels in the hierarchy, region name and division name. If I just check the location, I get the two levels in the hierarchy. So it behaves just like adding those two fields. In this case, I actually want region name, and I'm going to pick state name, and then I'm going to grab the... Let's count up the charts. So we'll add this as a count instead of adding the individual values. Now, you can see what I got there. I've got the region name, the state name, and the count. Maybe that's what you expected, maybe it isn't. What some of you might have expected to see is the region name listed once and have more of a hierarchical look, a blocked look. The reason that it shows up in a flat list like this is because this is what the default visualization is in Power View. Just by convention, everything starts with a table, which is a flat table, like a spreadsheet. So I can change that, though. I can make this a matrix. And a matrix has more of a hierarchical set of regions. It's got row groups. It's got column groups. And you'll see now we're getting this blocked structure, right? And getting Midwest once, and then getting another region once. And then we got subtotals. Now I can pull in something else to make this a true matrix. I can maybe take the visit year, and I can drag that to columns. And now we've got a matrix. And by the way, a little tip is if I double-click on the border here, it will auto-size the matrix to fit in a good amount of content. So here you can see the region, the geography on the rows, and the years on the columns, and we've got a little cross matrix going on. So that's basically how tables and matrices work. Let's see how charts work. So I'm going to create another Power View sheet. And here what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab the division name this time. Division is like a subset of a region in the United States. And then I'm going to grab the blood pressure, which, remember, is going to take the average. And then it's very easy to convert one visualization to another. I just go to column chart, and I say make this a stack column chart, which is the default. And there we go. Just like that, a couple of clicks, I got a chart. That shows me the blood pressure for every region. Somebody like that? Okay. Now, what happens if I were to add, let's say I want to look at it differently for men and women, right? I'll just go in and I'll select gender here. This is something that I want you to sort of notice along the way, that occasionally I'll do this. I'm not going to take gender and I'm going to say, put this on a legend or insert legend and make this the legend value or something and bind them together. I'm just going to check this field in the field list and say, incorporate this additional field somehow into the data visualization, and Power View will choose the next logical thing to do. So here it will create a legend. So we've got one for females and one for males. Now, like I said, by default, it starts with a stack chart, which means it stacks up the series together. In this case, it doesn't really make sense for me to add the two blood pressures together. I want to compare them. So I can change the stack chart to a cluster chart and then compare side-by-side men and women and the blood pressure in the different regions. There are a bunch of options that you can tweak with the chart. So, for example, there's an auto-generated title. You can turn that off. I could take the legend and I could put it at the bottom instead of on the side. You can add data labels or not, and so on. So that's how you create a basic chart. Now let's do some more interesting analysis. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to insert another Power View sheet. And here, let's call this, doctor visits or something like that. And what I want to do is I want to say, if I were to open up a hospital tomorrow, what's the distribution of demographics, specifically age, that I would see of patients coming in? Would I see a lot of young people? Would I see a lot of older people? What would that look like? So I'll just grab age, and then I will grab the number of charts. So we'll count up those charts again. And then I'm just going to convert this to a line chart. Just like that, we got a line chart. And that's what the trend looks like. It's the biggest group of patients that we're going to have coming in is going to be middle-aged people. And what's interesting, and there's a pretty big spike at around, age 57. So for whatever reason, at age 57, people go to the doctor a lot more. Oh, that's not good. Thought that was already plugged in. Give me one sec. This is a race against time. And I think this just slept on me. This is always fun. Bear with me for a second here. Yeah, if you have a question, now would be a fantastic time. Yes? So the question was, can you have a drill down link that goes to something external other than the Power View, like say a classic reporting services report? It's not so much a drill through, a drill down, but you can have sort of a drill through link where you just create a hyperlink and point it to the URL of your reporting services report. However, the limitation is what you can't do today is you can't have that link be dynamic based on the data. That said, you can't do that in the report. What you could do is in the model, you could have a calculated column that incorporates some of the data and points to the URL of a reporting services report, and then you would render that in the report, and it would be dynamic based on the data. But that's something you would do in the model. Other question? Yes. Right, so could I, if I had that cluster chart where I had the division on the axis, could I put a level within that was for, let's say, the states, and then drill from division into state? Yes, I could, and I'll show an example of that later. Miss, you had a question, yes? Yeah, that's a question we get a lot. So, for example, how can you have even more finer grain control over the colors. So, for example, if you want females to be red and males are blue, or I guess because that was backwards or something, or we had the examples where Coke wants Coke to be red and Pepsi should be blue or something like that. Unfortunately, you can't yet do that today, but that's something we hope to add. Sorry, just give me a sec here. Okay. Was there another question? You. Yeah, good question. The plan for SharePoint Online in Office 365 to be able to connect to live data, other data sources. It's a very broad question. I mean, there are other data sources you want to connect to in the cloud. There's also a lot of people who want to be able to connect back to their on-premise data. It's something that they're still investigating. I think there are other sessions where they might talk about that a little bit more. Sorry? They say the same thing, yeah. I don't work on that team myself. There are other people who might have more insight, but I don't believe even they would be able to say much concrete publicly today. So the best thing is to just provide your feedback to them about your scenarios, and because I know that they're very interested in those sorts of data points. Okay, so let me get back to my demo here. So I had added the chart ID. I can also count up multiple measures. So let's say, Well, before I do that, actually, let's go back to the gender. Like I said, I can pull in the gender. We can see what this trend looks like for men and women. Again, interesting insight there. That spike at 57 is only for the females, for whatever reason. So that's something that would be interesting to drill down into. So here, let's add another measure. Let's count up the diagnosis as well as the charts. So here we can add that. And you can see an interesting insight, right? When you're younger, you see that gap between the two lines? It means that there are a lot of times you're going to the doctor and it gets counted as a visit, but there's no diagnosis because everything's fine. Whereas when you get older, you're not really giving the doctor much of a challenge anymore if all you're asking them to do is find at least one thing wrong with you. So let's create another visualization. We've been talking about people getting diagnosed with different things. It would be interesting to see what different types of diseases there are. So if I explore my model again, I find this thing called ICD-9 disease. And the description tells me that it is a standard classification of different types of diseases. So I'll just click this and see what I get on the canvas. And look at that, I'm even getting images. These images are actually in the model. So, and then whenever I'm looking at a list of things like this, the card visualization is a nice way to look at them. So here I have these cards, a couple fields I don't really want here, get rid of them. Here I have these cards, and it's a nice way to just peruse this different list of diseases here. Now, I might want to see which kinds of these diseases are the most common. Anybody want to take a guess at what the most common type of disease is? Heart disease? Anybody else? Infections, diabetes. Not bad guesses. I would have never guessed this myself, but here's what it is. So if I bring in the count of the diagnosis again, now what I'm going to do is, now that we're talking about counts and I'm interested in frequency and I'm talking about the most common, maybe a chart would be better here. So I'm going to convert this to a bar chart. And I'm going to sort this, not by alphabetically, but by the count. And the thing that comes up at the top is, surprisingly, diseases of the endocrine system or, you know, metabolic disorders and things like that. I never would have guessed that, but that's what it is. So let's make this a little bit smaller, make some more room. And let's add a few other dimensions to analyze here. So one that I'm going to add is I have age groups here, so I've bucketed people by age. We'll grab the age group, and we'll grab the count of the diagnosis, and make that a column chart. And let's pull that down to the bottom. So you can see that diseases in general become, you know, more common as you get older. Let's add gender. So we'll say patient gender, and we'll count the diagnosis for these as well. But this time, we're going to make this into a new visualization. We're going to make this into a pie chart. So those who are waiting for the pie charts, there you go. So we've got our pie chart here. And then maybe there are a couple of just metrics, you know, just key metrics that I want to see what the values of those are for whatever I have selected at any given time. So let's say, let's go up and grab the two components of blood pressure. There is the systolic blood pressure, the upper number, and the diastolic blood pressure, the lower number. I just want to see those numbers kind of big in the corner. The way I can do that is I can convert this to a card. But then there are two styles of card. This is the default, which is good for showing a variety of different fields. But if I have a couple, one or two key metrics, I can change the card style to this thing called callout. And there we go, we got some big metrics. They're probably showing too many decimal places, so let me fix that with a couple of clicks. And here you go, got some big metrics in the corner. So, you know, a few clicks, you saw me create a pretty nice looking little dashboard there. But here's the beauty of it, the beauty of this semantic model. We know everything is interrelated. I didn't do any configuration here, but the interactivity and the cross-filtering and cross-highlighting is all just going to work. If I select this younger age group, we see, you know, how many people in how many of these diagnoses of different diseases are for young people. You could see very few. They're very healthy. Their blood pressure is fairly low. As we go through the age group, some of these diseases become more common. You see the blood pressure increasing in the top right there. Notice how the pie chart is cross-highlighting as well. So every visualization is built in with these PowerView tenets in mind of supporting cross-filtering or cross-highlighting. So the one that you really saw increase there was when I went from this age group, 50 to 64, to this one, 65 and older. You notice this bar really jumped up. That is diseases of the circulatory system. So heart disease really kicks in when you're 65 and older. But we can do some more cross-filtering here. So we could say, well, how does this differ between men and women, right? If I select men, you can see that about half of the heart disease diagnoses are for men. The other half are for women. So it's no less common. It's just as common in women, despite some popular misconceptions. So going back to your question about drill down, if I wanted to do drill down, this is the sort of generic classification for the disease. But what if I take this specific diagnosis description and put that in the axis as well? I'm going to put that just below the description. Nothing will happen right away because we're at the root level here. But I can actually pop this out and make it bigger. Here's diseases of the circulatory system. If I double-click on it, we're going to drill into that and then show what are the specific diagnoses that people were diagnosed with. And the top three that you'll see there are hypertension, which is types of high blood pressure. And again, we were highlighted by women. They're just as common in women as they are in men. So interesting insights there. So just doing a quick time check here. Let's create another visualization. Can I multiple filter? Oh yeah, could I select, you know, heart disease and also lung disease together? Yeah, I could do multi-select and cross-highlight like that. Yeah. Can I drill from one PowerView sheet to another? Not currently, no. So here, let's create another example of another visualization. So tiles, if I want to take those diseases again, I'm just going to add them to the canvas, and then I'm going to click this thing called tiles. It's a good example of where we're going beyond the typical Excel visualizations that you might be used to. It creates this container, and it's grouped by type of disease. And if I make this bigger, I can put anything in this container, and it's going to be scoped to what I have selected above. So in here, maybe let's take the patient age, patient gender, the count of the diagnosis, and make that a line chart. And now we can see what the trend looks like. So for each of these things, you know, we can see for heart disease, what does the trend look like? Well, it's very rare when you're young, and then it gets a lot more common when you're older. Again, the lines look pretty similar from men and women. If I select the nervous system, for example, you can see it's a very different pattern. It affects younger people quite a bit. So this is another way of going beyond Excel. By the way, another example of that, of something that's sort of like a container, if I go back to this sheet here where I had this chart for visits and diagnosis, if I were to add another group here, let's say I wanted to break this down by another dimension. I want to break it down geographically by regions of the United States. If I go and select region, what's it going to do? Because, I mean, where's it going to put that? I already have both axes in use. I already have the legend in use. How's it going to incorporate that additional group? In Excel, you'd kind of be done at this point. So what I can do is I can select region name, and it does something pretty cool, which is it creates small multiples. It creates, some people call it a trellis chart. It's got four of these charts, and the number of charts are dynamic depending on the number of values of that field. And then we can compare, you know, what the trend looks like in different regions. And again, insights like the one there jumps out at you that that big spike at age 57, we found out it was age 57, we found out it was only women, now we found out it's only in the Western states for whatever reason. So here, we were talking about blood pressure and, you know, heart disease and that sort of thing. What I can do is I can create, let's create another PowerView here and show you another really cool visualization. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take the patient age, or sorry, the patient gender, and I'm going to grab a few metrics. I'm going to grab the systolic blood pressure. I'm going to grab the weight, because I think weight is correlated with blood pressure. Whoops, that one didn't take. And I'm also going to grab, let's grab the number of charts as well. I'll just count those up. And I'll convert that to a scatter chart. So under other chart types, I'll select the scatter chart, and it's going to give me a bubble chart. So I've got blood pressure going from left to right, weight going from bottom to top, and you can see because you've got that diagonal trend that there is a correlation. Right? But the really cool thing that I can do is I can take something like patient age and drag it to this thing called play axis. And now we're going to get an animated bubble chart. And the play axis represents the age of the sort of composite average patient that we just created, and we can see how men and women, their blood pressure and their weight evolves over their lifespan. So what I can do is I can drag this back, and I can select men and women. Because what's curious to me is we've been saying that, you know, women, you can see here, have lower blood pressure than men, at least early in life, and yet they have diagnosis of high blood pressure and heart disease just as much as men. So those kind of contradict each other in my head. So there must be some explanation for that. Well, if I play that out, you can see the age ticking away in the top right corner there. They're both increasing in terms of weight and blood pressure. But as you notice, when they get older, what happens? The women catch up to the men. As you're going from left to right, they're catching up and actually now surpassing men in terms of blood pressure. So that's why later in life, they're diagnosed with those sorts of issues just as much. The yellow message there says that it's showing a representative sample of the data. In some cases, we're able to segment the data and page in more as you scroll or something. In other cases, we have a limit of how much data we could show. So for example, how many frames of this animation we can show. And so it's taking a representative sample of, you know, 60 of them, for example. I'm going to create one more visualization. And what I'm going to do here is also really cool. I'm going to take the state name. Notice the state shows up with this little geography icon here. That's because in the model, it recognized it as the name of a state, not just a string. And I'm going to grab the number of visits to the doctor and count those up. So here's a table that I have. This is literally the only data that this is going to work on. There's nothing else that I'm pulling in to make this magic happen. All I've got is the name of the state and the count of the number of charts. What I do is I just go up here to map, and this is going to go to Bing, and it's going to geocode those state names, and it's going to give me a map. There we go. And it's fully interactive, so I can zoom in on these. I could filter some things out, so it's showing Alaska and Hawaii, and a lot of times we just want to look at United States. So here in this filter pane here, we've got the state names. You can see all these different state names here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to select all of them, but I'm going to deselect Alaska and Hawaii. And there we go. We filter those out, and now I can zoom in more. And cross-filtering, cross-highlighting, all that stuff still works here. So there you go. There's a sort of a whirlwind tour of not everything in PowerView, but a good portion of the really cool features. There's so much in it that I couldn't even fit everything into this session. So I'm just going to switch over to my slide for a sec. So some of the key takeaways that I hope you got from this session. Number one, you know, hopefully there were fewer questions nowadays about what is Microsoft's BI tool, because the answer to that increasingly is it's Excel. It's Excel on your desktop, or it's Excel in SharePoint. It's one app where you can do spreadsheet stuff, freeform analysis, you can do modeling, you can do visualization. Workbooks really are not just spreadsheets anymore like they used to be. You can see they're containing a data model, a rich semantic data model, and they're containing the next generation of data visualizations. The other interesting thing from more of the PowerView perspective for people who are already using PowerView is it now creates this opportunity where you could technically, in some scenarios, use PowerView without connectivity to a server. If the PowerView report and the data model are embedded within the report, within the workbook, you could use that on your desktop, you know, on a plane without connectivity. And finally, the last piece, which is just reminding me that I forgot to show, is publishing this up to SharePoint. So let me just show that to you really quickly. Running a little bit long on time, but I think it's important to show you this. So here I have PowerView in Excel web app, and I just opened up, so I'm at my site here, I had a document library, and I published that workbook up to SharePoint 2013. I just open it up, it's gonna open up in Excel services, and you're gonna see in Excel web app will actually load PowerView. And here's the same thing we saw in Excel client, and the interactivity is still there. So for example, I could still filter this, and cross-filter, cross-highlight. So, coming back here. Last thing I want to say is just make sure you fill out your evaluations. Tell us what you liked about this session so that we can keep doing it. Tell us what you would like to see changed so that we can fix it. If you have any other questions, definitely come down to the Ask the Experts tonight. There'll be people there from Excel, from, you know, people who know a lot about the model, people who know a lot about PowerView as well, so we can try and answer your questions. So with that, I want to wrap it up, say thank you very much for coming to this session. If you have any questions, I'd like to open it up now for whatever. few minutes we have remaining. Thanks. Yes. Right. So you added some measures to your bubble chart, and when you put them there, the only thing you see is it's counting them. Is that the only option that you see? Okay, so the reason for that is probably that it's a non-numeric column. Could that be? So if you have a non-numeric column, the only thing that it can do is it can count them, because that's a quantitative axis. Sure, then I probably wouldn't use a scatter chart, because the scatter chart, those things are fundamentally quantitative axis. It's the grouping are choosing the bubbles. So you might want more of a line chart, for example, or a column chart or a bar chart. Typically on the bubble chart, the axis will be something that is ordered and quantitative, like a numeric value. The other thing that you could do, though, is you could do the multiples that I showed, where if you had something like, you know, you wanted to do it by year, 2002, 2003, 2004, you could have multiple bubble charts, right, with that being the multiple group, and then compare those side by side. Yeah. Sorry, you there in the back?
I just realized this morning that this is Silverlight. What's the mobile storage for this?
Okay, great question. So the question is, you realize that this is Silverlight. Yep, it's running Silverlight in Excel client. It's running Silverlight in Excel web app. What is the mobile story? The mobile story is that this may or may not work on some mobile devices in terms of the actual Silverlight application. So for example, if you're running Windows 8 Pro, that does support Silverlight. If you're running Windows RT, that does not support Silverlight. iPad as well does not have native support for Silverlight. So there are some cases where it will work just fine, like on a Surface Pro or something like that. There are other cases, like on the iPad, for example, where you won't be able to just go to Excel web app and see that. However, there's another answer to that. In some ways, you know, people want sort of a native app experience on these mobile devices anyways. And I'm not sure if any of you would have caught Carolyn and Siyoung's session, I think, a day or two ago. But they finally revealed what we've been working on, and I myself have been working on for a little while, which is native app experiences on Win8 and on iOS. So you'll have native apps available from the Windows Store and from the App Store. You open them up on these two first-class devices, and then you'll get a nice native experience for browsing Excel workbooks that includes native Excel sheets, as well as Power View sheets and standalone Power View reports. So you'll have a native experience for that. It's not to say that we won't go. We often get the question, are you guys going to build an HTML5 version? We may still do that. I mean, ultimately, we want this thing to be cross-platform and work across all sorts of different devices. The technology choices that we make to do that, we know, for example, we're building two native apps. We're still looking into HTML5 as well for other scenarios. Okay? I believe you there, sir. You were next. Yeah.
Okay, so is there any feature that you use, I mean, by using the browser to Excel?
Is there any feature that isn't available in the browser? Yeah, the big one is authoring. So you can't actually create the reports in Excel web app. You have to create them in Excel client. And then you can save them to SharePoint and interact with them. Okay. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
The Power View standalone mode.
Yeah.
They already supporting the model.
Power View standalone mode. I mentioned that, you know, that was going to have support for multi-dimensional models earlier than Excel. It does not yet support it in Service Pack 1. We just announced that, you know, we showed that there's an example of that code working. But we haven't revealed yet what the release date for that is. So the story for that is still what we announced a while ago, which is that we are going to release that for the next major release of SQL Server before then. What that release vehicle is and exactly when it is not something that we've disclosed yet. Yes, sir?
Is SSRS integrated SharePoint mode going away?
Absolutely not. In fact, Power View in Excel web app depends on SSRS in SharePoint mode. They share the same server, the same engine. It's just two different types of reports for two different scenarios, as I explained sort of towards the beginning of the session. By the way, if anybody is interested in how you actually deploy this stuff and get SSRS and Excel web app and all these things working, I have a session tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., I believe, that shows you how to set up SSRS in SharePoint 2013 to get all this stuff working. Any other questions? Oh. Okay, so you're talking about you have a workbook.
That, workbook model.
Yeah.
And then, but it's
still going to screen it over to the AS. Yeah, so when you take a workbook that's got an embedded model and then you put it in SharePoint, when you actually hit that model, what happens is Excel Services streams that model outside of the workbook and puts it in Analysis Services. Are there any concerns with performance or the size of that model? Those could be two. If they're on the same server, you probably won't have much of a problem. If they're on different servers, you want to make sure, obviously, that you have good infrastructure within the SharePoint farm and within your backend, that these things have a fast connection between them because it is going to be going over the wire. But I think that in some cases, you know, as long as that's in place, the performance should be pretty good. You do hit the point eventually where, for various reasons, that one included, you might want to go to an analysis services database where this thing is permanently hosted in an analysis services database. For example, I believe in SharePoint 2010, I'm not sure if they've raised this in 2013, but there was a limit of 2 gigabyte file size. So eventually you're going to hit that limit and you've got to go to an AS database. I think they might have increased that, I don't remember for sure. But I mean, when you're talking gigabytes, that's the point where probably you've outgrown a workbook. Yes, sir. That's an interesting question. Has this been field tested in any universities or colleges? Professors could upload this and, you know, students can interact with it? Offhand, I'm not aware of anything like that, but there very well could be. I'd have to ask our marketing team. Yeah. Yes, ma'am? Is it going to be available on Mac? So PowerView standalone works in Safari on Mac. PowerView in Excel is not available on Mac. I believe the reason for that, aside from just, you know, priorities and what we focused on prioritizing Windows, is that the way that the PowerView Silverlight integration works inside of Excel is it's dependent on ActiveX, and Office, including Excel, on non-Windows generally doesn't support ActiveX. Office Mac does not support ActiveX, right? It's a Windows technology. So. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Okay, so you're trying to use PowerView in an Excel workbook in SharePoint Online, and it works in the Excel web app, but it does not work in an Excel Services web part. Did I get that correct? Okay. I'm not aware of an issue like that. I know that there is this important distinction between, you know, Excel web app and Excel Services. You need to make sure you're running Excel Services. In the cloud, it's a little bit different. I mean, it's you're running Excel web app with... it's not quite Excel Services like it is on-premise, but as far as I know, that should work, but I'd have to double-check that. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Yeah, it's a good question. Are there other Bing Maps geocoding services or mapping services that we can take advantage of? Like, can I find the distance from something to something else or between two points? Or can I find where's the closest, you know, parking lot to this or something like that? Currently, we haven't hooked into any of that yet. So this is just the first incarnation. It's basically just using it for geocoding and for the map tiles. But we have a bunch of ideas on our backlog of things that we could do with Bing Maps. So those are some cool ones. Anybody else? Yes. Uh-huh. By all means, you could do that. I think I showed a couple of examples of that. So you're asking about aggregating values by different aggregate functions. So not necessarily just counting them, but, you know, summing them, averaging them, taking them in, the max. Is that what you mean? Oh, you're talking about more advanced ones, like I want to do running total or percentage of total or year-over-year average or something like that. Yeah, so those aren't built into the PowerView UI, but when I mentioned that you can create these formulas in the model, you can certainly do that in Excel, and you use the DAX language, which is essentially an Excel formula language, and those will show up in PowerView with a little calculator icon, and then you can use those, you know, wherever you would use a measure. Yeah, and it can be an arbitrary Excel formula. Yeah. Other questions? By the way, if I'm running long for the next speaker, whoever it is that's supposed to kick me out can just kick me out. Any other questions? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. Is PowerView supported? I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing the end of that. Per sale, like per transaction level? Okay, so you're talking about like drill to details, like I get to a very, very low level of details. Yes and no. I mean, you can get down arbitrarily deep. I could put five things in my drill down path that go all the way down to transaction level. The thing that won't happen is it's going to be the type of visualization won't change. You know, if it's a chart, it will remain a chart. It just changes what's plotted on the axis. So in some drill to detail scenarios, what you want to do is you drill down a chart, you drill down a chart, and eventually when you get the details, it's like, okay, now show me a grid with the actual records. It doesn't. We don't have that last feature yet, but we do have, you know, arbitrary depth drill down. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Last call. Yes, sir. Not currently. So the question was, is it possible to customize the icons that are plotted on the maps? Right now, it's just a bubble that's plotted on the maps. There's one other mode where if I were to add one other field, it would actually render a pie chart for each of those. But those are the only two options we have available today. There are a whole bunch more, like I said, on the backlog of, you know, for example, you may want to do something custom like that. You want to render an icon or something. You may want to render things that aren't even points anymore. You may want to color, you know, the United States, the shapes of the states. So there's a bunch of scenarios that are not yet in this release that we'd like to build on. Okay, last question because they're turning up the lights on me. Any plans for combo charts? So by that you mean sort of like I could have a column chart and a line chart, the two different series in the same chart. That has come up before, it's just not yet in the current release. Another one that I'll throw in there is dual axis charts. That's also one that we wanted to squeeze in and weren't able to fit in the release. So a lot of the typical ones that you would expect are on our list of priorities. Yeah. Okay, I think I'll wrap it up. We're out of time. Thank you again very much for coming. I hope it was...